Thank you. This is a meeting of the Due Process Oversight Committee, and we are on the 16th of June. I, as chair, can confirm that we have a quorum and we are opening the call to the public. I think the first is to report a set of minutes for the meeting held in March. There are no matters arising, and also no matters arising from the DPOC meeting held on the 13th of October. The first paper that we will consider is in relation to the technical activities, and I would like to invite Henry to introduce this paper to us. Henry.
Thank you very much. So this is paper 1B. This is the paper, the technical staff table, at each of your meetings, and it's provided to keep you informed and up to date about the progress of the board and the interpretations committee with projects on the work plan, as well as report any other technical activities since your previous meeting at the beginning of March. The paper today, as usual, doesn't require any specific approval of the committee. There is a matter, though, today, a technical matter requiring specific approval of the committee, and that's dealt with as the next agenda item as a separate topic to be talked to just separately shortly. So I'm going to take this paper largely as read, but maybe if you turn to paragraph 6 on page 2, I'll just use this summary, if that's okay with the committee, just to highlight a few points from the paper. First, you'll see at the top that the board published 3 major consultation documents in the period. These have all been reported on at previous meetings. But in particular, just I think worth highlighting that, of course, Neely Shah at the last meeting updated you on the request for information for the agenda consultation. That was at the last meeting. And there's also a session with the full trustees tomorrow on the request for information to get further views about the state of the future work plan and the board's priorities. And obviously, we will keep you informed about progress with this consultation. It's one of these topics on which we're specifically required by the Due Process Handbook to keep you informed. I think the other thing, and it's something we did discuss at the last meeting, but it's just also to note here, the comment period on these 3 consultations were longer than the minimum specified by the Due Process Handbook. It remains an important consideration, balancing, allowing sufficient time for our stakeholders to provide high quality input, and balancing that with the need to continue progressing our work plan. Just for completeness, in the fifth bullet point, you'll see the board wrapped up its work on extending the availability of practical relief for lessees in accounting for COVID-19 related rent concessions. As we reported at the last meeting, despite the very short comment period, you'll remember this was a 14-day comment period, we actually received a good amount of feedback from stakeholders, and there was strong support for what had been proposed in the exposure draft to extend the availability of the relief by year, including from investors as well. So that was wrapped up on a timely basis during March. On this page 2, I think it's the fourth bullet, I highlight that next week the board will be considering whether to propose a narrow scope amendment, a very targeted narrow scope amendment to the insurance contract standard IFRS 17. This is to assist insurers and investors and to improve the initial information that will be presented to the markets when the insurers first apply IFRS 17 with IFRS 9. We'll talk about this the next paper. So I suggest if we have any questions on that particular topic, we just hold that until the next agenda item. I think the other projects highlighted in this report are self-explanatory, but maybe just before I wrap up, I'll just note the board has now considered the feedback from its major discussion paper that it published last year on goodwill and impairment, and will shortly start its redeliberations. Of course, a key topic in that discussion paper was how goodwill should be accounted for after the acquisition, after the business combination. And you'll recall in the discussion paper, the board's preliminary view was to retain the current impairment-only model for accounting for goodwill and not change to an amortization model. But that was by a very slim majority, and that's why the discussion paper was a very balanced discussion of the pros and cons on both sides of this issue. Now, you'll have seen in the paper, our stakeholders, there was no magic bullet to answer this. They remain of divided views on this. The other just, I think, key thing to highlight with this project is, of course, if you're aware, the FASB is also considering the topic. It is at a more advanced stage than the ISB, and it has tentatively decided to reintroduce amortization. So a key topic on an upcoming educational meeting that the ISB is holding with the FASB at the end of next month, and has been deliberately timed to sort of fit in with these redeliberations, is obviously going to be the accounting for goodwill, and that gives our board members a good opportunity to discuss with the FASB members before our board start making their decisions in this project. So I just wanted to flag that one. But with that, just see if there are any questions or comments from the committee.
I was just asking any feedback, observations, or comment from anyone, even though no decision is asked of us from this paper. If not, then I will move on to the next item on the agenda, which is, as Henry alluded to, a request to shorten the comment period in relation to a narrow scope proposed amendments to IFRS 17. So I will ask Rihanna to present the paper.
Thank you, and good day to all the committee members. So agenda paper 1C is asking the committee for approval for a shortened comment period on the proposed amendment to IFRS 17 that Henry just mentioned. Now, at the June board meeting, the board will be asked whether they want to publish an exposure draft on the shortened or the narrow scope amendment to IFRS 17. And really, the purpose of this amendment is to provide relief to insurers in relation to the comparative period, so the information they present in their comparative period on initial application of both IFRS 17 and IFRS 9 at the same time. And the relief is really designed to help the insurers, but also help the users of those financial statements by improving the information being provided in the comparative period. And this whole amendment has really arisen because of new information that has been obtained from insurers now that they are more advanced in the implementation process of both IFRS 17 and IFRS 9. If the board supports the publication of such an exposure draft, it will also set the comment period for that exposure draft. And what we've considered is that this amendment would be finalized before the 1st of January 2022. And the reason for that is that in order to apply the option that we are proposing in the amendment, the insurers would need to collect information from the 1st of January 22. And so we want to give them that certainty by finalizing the amendment before the end of the year. Now, given the time it takes to and the due process to publish the exposure draft and to finalize the amendments, the staff plan to recommend a comment period of 60 days to the board. And we've taken into account the limited or the, you know, number of insurers affected. It doesn't affect all the insurers. It's only those that want to restate comparatives for IFRS 9. And also the nature of the narrow scope amendment. We think 60 days would provide stakeholders with sufficient time to consider and comment on the proposals. Consequently, we are asking the Due Process Oversight Committee to approve a shortened comment period of no less than 30 days. And although our plan, as I've just said, is to ask or recommend to the board a period of 60 days, we would like to ask the committee for approval of no less than 30 days in case the board decides to set a shorter period or a different period to the 60 days that we are recommending. So with that, I will hand over to see if there are any questions and comments and whether the committee approves our request.
Thank you. Joanna.
Brianna, in terms of fully understand what you say, fully understand in terms of the shortened time, but what you are recommending to the board is that you believe that 60 days is an appropriate time for them to do that, but then asking us to approve not less than 30 days. So I guess for me as a committee member, I need the assurance from you, because you haven't said that in this paper or in your words, that 30 days is also long enough for them to do this, because you make the comment that you think 60 days is long enough.
I think you're right that 30 days would be enough for them to comment. I think we just want to be a bit more generous in the time we give them, especially given that part of this period might fall over August, which, you know, typically is a quiet time in Europe. So we want to take that into account. That's why we are recommending 60 days, but we think if we have to, 30 days would be also insufficient. That's our question.
Because I guess that's the core to me. You're asking us to approve that, and you're actually, your first comment was because it's over August, you actually think 60 days might be better. So I'm still a little confused as to whether I'm going 60 or 30, to be honest.
Sue?
I think your question's a fair one, Joanna. The staff clearly, their recommendation is 60 days. The only reason for asking you for 30 is that it does mean that if the board were to approve, decide they wanted something less than 60, it prevents us having to come back and ask for permission again. If the committee feels more comfortable approving 60 days, then that's fine. It just means we don't have the same flexibility when we get to the board table.
Can I ask whether it is usual when the board deliberates this that you tell them what shortened period the DPOC had already given, has already approved, or is that kept blind to them so that they're not influenced by what they consider to be the right period?
It's public meeting.
Right, yeah, okay.
I mean, I'm interested in other people's views. It's just the recommendation is 60, saying that's how long we think they will need. And yes, so long as I can be sure that the board will consider exactly what Rihanna has just said in potentially coming to even a lower figure or a lower time in terms of saying 30 days.
Henry.
Thank you. It was only just to be clear that we had this is the mechanism that we've often used because of the board having a bit of flexibility about the comment period that they can set, and therefore we've often tried to get the approval of this committee for a sort of like a potential range, but I understand your point.
So if I may just summarize the current request, I think the staff has put to us that 30 days will be sufficient, but would like us to approve a range of anything between 30 days and 60 days, depending what the outcome of the board deliberation is on this issue. Is that what what we are trying, what we are being asked to approve.
Yes.
Okay, so is there any other comments or thoughts to give the board more flexibility as to presumably they will be in a better position to assess as to whether, you know, 30 days will be enough to, or whether they would prefer a 60-day comment period. So it will finally be up to them. And it will remove the need for them to come to us once more. So we're giving them a range. Michelle?
Yeah, thank you. For me, the most important number is the minimum we see. You know, we say 30 days is minimum, and after that, you know, I think I would leave that to the board to decide what makes most sense in terms of considering the type of questions, the timing, and so on. But
and I think that given the explanation, since insurers will have to be ready with this, or it would be good for them to know before at the end of the year, if the shortened comment period would have the advantage of giving them more time for other things. So I think the board is in a better position than us to make that trade-off. So I would be happy to go for the 30-day minimum.
Okay. Thank you. Any other objection to this? Do we approve? Yes, we approve. Okay, thank you. So let's move to the next topic, which is about some proposed development on the two consultative groups. So I'm going to invite Henry and Fred to present this paper.
Thank you. And I'll just say a few words to start this one off. So paper 1D is a follow-up to the last review of the ISB's consultative group that this committee did last October. For members of the committee who joined since that time, this is an annual review. We do typically, it's around the October-November meeting time of the consultative group. And as members of the committee are aware, in the last two reviews, we've been working to try and bring a little bit more rigor to this process. And in the last meeting, I think you highlighted that perhaps the key metric that was missing was some measure of the board's satisfaction with the input that they are getting from the group. So we wanted just to provide you with an update on what we are doing. And so I'll just hand over to my colleague, Fred Nieto, who is responsible for leading our stakeholder engagement, just to say a few more specific words. Thanks, Fred.
Thank you, Henry. Hello, committee members. Yes, in paper 1D, paragraphs 6 to 9, particularly, we share some highlights with you on the steps that we've taken since last autumn to formalize the feedback gathering process from board members and staff participating at the meetings that we hold with consultative groups. So as this spring, we've begun to use a short survey that's built to gather data via a rating of usefulness of the input obtained at the meeting from board members and from staff. And our hope is that with this approach, we can track the ratings over time. We've also left room for qualitative feedback from staff and board members. And we're relying on technology that was rolled out in 2020 by the Business Process and Technology Program. I'm encouraged so far by reactions from board members and staff. I think they appreciate the opportunity to share this feedback, and they also understand how it can very much help the stakeholder engagement team in its role to promote the effectiveness of the consultative group meetings. And I think we also note that in advance of reporting results of the review of consultative groups to the board and the GPOC, we're going to be sharing the feedback from the surveys with the respective lead board members assigned to these groups so that they can also weigh in on their impressions of everything that we've gathered. The one thing I'll just leave you with, though, and pause on is, the surveys are very much oriented around the effectiveness of the meetings. But beyond that, the functioning of the groups, there are a lot of activities that consultative group members help us out with that are not necessarily captured by such a survey, be it when members are helping our staff and board members network with other stakeholders or inviting them to participate at speaking engagements. Thank you.
Thank you. Michelle, you have a hand up?
Yes, thank you. Two questions. One, as you said, this is one of the many dimensions of the role of these groups and their membership. Are you going to be able to put together the full sort of holistic assessment of the group, of the individuals in the group at some point? And how does that feed into the, I would say, the nomination and appointment process that these groups are operating under?
Well, for each group, they have, I guess, their own charter and their own approach to the nomination process. So at one extreme, you would have our investor group, which is completely independent, and therefore the chairs of that group are responsible for nominating members. We are secretariat for them, and we help them in finding members, and we weigh in with our views, but ultimately they sort of take their own vote. And then I think at the other end, you have groups such as ASAF, where the membership is appointed by the trustees. So we will try to tailor that approach that we take, you know, given, I guess, the charter of each of the groups. And in terms of holistic assessment, the groups over the years have conducted internal reviews. And so we will look to repeat those exercises in the future. And I think the aim will be to be a little bit more technologically advanced in terms of relying on this technology that the program introduced last year to help us better capture impressions around the usefulness and the effectiveness.
Yeah, if I may, just Teresa, one. I think it's important that, you know, we've been discussing this topic for a number of years now, and you know, this is something that we brought up, and I think the issue is not so much is one of the, you know, how each individual group is operating, but also from a due process standpoint and an effectiveness of the organization as a whole. There's a broader issue that trustees are keenly interested in. So I think the feedback that should not be restricted to, you know, the board members or the actual the chairmanship of each of this group, but should really be part of a more holistic assessment of the effectiveness of this apparatus, basically, to deliver on the objective of the board. So what you do is very much welcome, but I would ask you to make sure that we benefit from that assessment and going forward. Thank you.
Okay, any other comments, observations? If not, and I think the final formal item on the agenda is to ask Richard if we have received any correspondence that should be drawn to the attention of this committee.
No, no correspondence received as of today, Teresa.
Thank you. So that no AOB from any members? If not, then I draw the public call to a close.